Welcome along to a Friday Night Clive podcast special with me, Clive Payne. In this episode, we're hearing about Holocaust Memorial Day. I spoke to a variety of guests, including Lord Austin, who at the time was MP for Dudley North, about his family's first-hand experience of the Holocaust. Now, as I was saying earlier on, we're talking about Holocaust Memorial Day. Now, it's observed annually on the 27th of January. It does so in memory of the millions who were murdered in the Holocaust and subsequent genocides in Bosnia, Cambodia, Darfur, and Rwanda. In order to challenge hatred and persecution in the UK today. Now, this year, we mark the 75th anniversary of the liberation by the Red Army of the Auschwitz-Birkenau, the largest Nazi concentration and death camp. 2020 also marks the 25th anniversary of the Bosnian genocide, and I'm joined in the studio by former Labour MP Ian Austin. Ian, thank you very much for coming.
Thanks,
to
Clive,
Night,
and thanks for inviting me in.
No, thank you for your time. Now, for anybody who might be unfamiliar with the Holocaust, can you just explain what it was?
Well, the Holocaust was a systematic, mechanised, almost industrial slaughter of 6 million Jews, but also other people the Nazis persecuted, so gay people, gypsies, other people they regarded as inferior. Hmm. But what singles the Holocaust out and makes it unique is that it was an attempt to wipe out an entire people, an entire race. And as I said, 6 million Jews were killed. Huge numbers of people in Poland, in Germany, in Eastern Europe, and elsewhere in Europe as the Nazis sort of invaded and conquered other countries. So I regard it as history's greatest crime. And I think that it's...
I never thought of it like that.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it's something that we should remember each year. But the point of remembering this, and it's, I think, twofold, really. It's to pay our respects to the millions of people that were killed, but it's also to warn people today about where hatred, prejudice, racism can lead if it's not, if people don't stand up and argue against these things.
What about it is so important to you then?
Well, look, the thing that sparked my sort of interest in this, I mean, my dad was a refugee. He came here in 1939. He was 10 years old. He came from a town in what was then Czechoslovakia. He was put on a train by his mum and teenage sisters. It was the last time he'd see them. Mm. They were rounded up in prison, first in a ghetto, then in a place called Theresienstadt. And then finally they were sent to Treblinka, where they were murdered in October 1942. And he arrived in the UK. He was unable to speak the language. It was incredible. He only knew three words, which were hot cross and bun. But he grew up to become the youngest grammar school headmaster in the country. Brought up four kids. And was honoured by the Queen with an MBE for services to charity and education. And lots of people in Dudley will know him because he was the head teacher at Dudley Grammar School and then the Dudley School. So, you know, from a terrible childhood, unbelievable.
Did he speak,
things to have to deal with.
Yeah, did he speak much to you about his experiences?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well,
we knew about this from a young age. I mean, it was a sort of family. We didn't talk about it outside the family for a long time.
No.
But in later life, he wrote a book. He did lots of talks. He raised a lot of money for the Holocaust Educational Trust. He did a lot of work with them. He went around speaking in schools and colleges, Rotary clubs, all sorts of organisations, telling them about the Holocaust, about his experiences.
Now, yesterday, His Royal Highness Prince Charles warned in his speech at an event in Israel that was to mark the 75 years since the liberation of the Nazi death camp, that hatred and intolerance still lurk in the human heart. Now, I thought those were really powerful words, but you know what Prince Charles is like. Now, he went on to add, amongst other things, that hatred and violence tell new lies, adopt new disguises, and still seek new victims. So why do you think that behaviour continues today? Because it does. It's frightening.
I think there are all sorts of reasons for this, aren't there? But it is... Look, it's appalling, isn't it, that even in the 21st century, people are still singled out on the basis of what they look like or the religion they practice, who they worship, where they're from, the language they speak.
you think?
But I think there's less. Well,
we've come on a long. We've come a long way.
Look, things are very different from what they were in the '70s.
Mm.
When but I think you see different sort of. You see this developing in different ways. I mean, anti-Semitism has become a scandal in politics in a way that would have been unimaginable 5 years ago. Shocking. A complete disgrace.
Why do you think that's happened? Because five years is a short period of time.
Well, look, I think that's sort of complicated and difficult. I mean, complicated and, you know, I left the Labour Party over it, so, and I stood down from Parliament because of all this, but because I, you know, I couldn't ask people to vote Labour when it was led by Jeremy Corbyn, but the, and I think under his leadership, I mean, look, I didn't want to sort of, you know, tonight's not really, today, Holocaust Memorial Week's not, perhaps not the point to be making, well, I suppose it is really in a way, isn't it, when you see a major political party sort of poisoned by racism, poisoned by anti-Semitism in the 21st century. I think that is a deeply shocking thing. But we've seen other attempts. I think in our community, we've seen the far right come here and try and divide our community and try and whip up ill feeling against, you know, the Muslim community. And I think we've got to learn lessons from history's darkest hours, and we've got to ensure that. And the thing about this that, you know, the thing I would always say to people is this: that, you know, today at Dudley College we have 400 people listening to Mindu Hornick, who'd been imprisoned in Auschwitz as a teenager. She's now 90. She's speaking at sort of 6 events this weekend. I mean, it's an incredible thing for her to be doing. But it's easy to speak at an event like that for me. You know, I can go along there, 400 people, they all agree with me. You know, you sort of say racism's a bad thing, they all applaud. It's much more difficult to challenge these things in your family, amongst your friends, in your workplace, for those of us in politics, in the political parties that we're members of. But that's when you've really got to be able to do this.
And why do you think it's more difficult?
Well, because, look, obviously it's easy to condemn racism when everybody agrees with you. But when you're challenging people's views, when you're calling people out, when you're telling them that what they're saying is wrong, or the way they're behaving is unacceptable, that's obviously much more difficult. But I think that... But that's when it really counts.
Mm. So how consistent...
And it's meaningless to do it in a forum where everybody agrees with you.
Yeah.
If you're not prepared to do it, when it's more difficult.
How can society reform against anti-Semitism? And, you know, what is your personal commitment to do this with?
Well, I think that... Look, I think we've... I mean, the reason we have this event every year, the reason I organise it, it is really an anti-racism event. If I said to people in Dudley, come along to the anti-racism event, I'm not sure how many people would... I mean, we get quite a few, I think, but we perhaps wouldn't get 400 people on a Friday lunchtime in January. But we do it in this historical context, and we get a survivor that comes and speak, and local people want to come to that. But the message is clearly, you know, an anti-racist message. I think we have to be absolutely intolerant about racism, wherever it rears its head. So whether that's in politics or football matches, when, you know, monkey chants, this sort of thing. If it's in a workplace, if it's in the street, it's completely unacceptable. In the 21st century, that we're still having to have these arguments, I think is incredible.
Do you think our laws are strong enough?
I think that... Are the laws strong enough? I don't know. I mean, there are laws... Look, whether or not the laws are strong enough, they've got to be applied properly. You know, when I was an MP, I did a lot of work on this, about whether the CPS take these things seriously and all that. Look, the other thing that I would say about this as well is that one of the reasons Labour lost the election so badly was because people felt, I mean, there was Brexit, you know, all these other factors, but it is definitely the case that there are lots of people in Britain who weren't going to vote for a party they felt had been infected by racism against Jewish people. And people, even, I mean, in a place like Dudley, no Jewish people at all, people mention this to me. People mention anti-Semitism, Jeremy Corbyn. And I think so. And I think we should be proud of our country that racism was rejected, racism and extremism were rejected so emphatically at the election just 6 weeks ago. I think that is, I think it is a good thing about Britain that ordinary people in ordinary towns like Dudley were not going to put up with this. I think it's a big lesson for the Labour Party to learn.
What did it mean to you to be part of the commemoration today at Dudley College?
Well, it's an amazing event, you know, 400 people from all backgrounds, all walks of life, all of Dudley's different and diverse communities, leading figures from the Muslim community, from the Sikh community, from the Hindu community, school children, college students, people from churches, local councillors, all four of the borough's MPs, the chief of police. I mean, it's a really great civic event. The first year, it's funny, you know, the first year I was an MP in 2005, I was invited along to the Holocaust commemoration. And I thought, I'll go to that, of course, you know, with my dad's background and all that. So I went along there. There were eight people. It was in Dudley Library. And three of them were me, my mum and my dad.
Eight people?
Eight people, yeah. And I thought, this isn't really good enough. So we moved it to the college, and the first year, the next year, we had about 30. A year after that, maybe 50. But we've built it up over the years, and it's now over 400 people. There are 400 seats out today, and there were people standing at the back. And it's one of the largest Holocaust commemorations in the country, and it happens here in Dudley, in a community with no Jewish people at all. And today, people were there from Dudley, but from Birmingham as well, and even some people have travelled from London to be with us, including the deputy ambassador from the Israeli embassy, had come to Dudley today because she'd heard about this amazing event where lots of people commemorate the murder of 6 million Jewish people. So it's I think it's a great thing about our community. I mean, I look at this room full of people.
Yeah.
And when I introduced it, the whole point I make is that this is about learning from the past. It's about understanding. The Holocaust, you know, it didn't start with gas chambers and the industrial slaughter of millions of people. It started with words. It started with people being singled out on the basis of how they worshipped or what they looked like. It started with conspiracy theories, with communities being divided. That's how it started. In the end, that's how these things always start. That's how the other genocides that you listed earlier in Bosnia or Rwanda or Darfur, how they started as well. And it shows how vigilant we've got to be. So I think it's a great thing about our community that people come together to dedicate themselves to oppose the ugly poison of racial and religious prejudice and hatred wherever it rears its head. And we've got to be really vigilant about this. We can't be complacent. And we've got to challenge it and call it out, however difficult that is.
Mm. Now, you've already illustrated that it has such a strong ethos by the very nature of how many people are in attendance today. And it's something that we can't just remember it once a year and then park it on next year. It's something that we have to adopt in our lives and see throughout every day of our lives, haven't we?
I think there's amazing work going on in our community on this. I mean, today we heard from two students who visited Auschwitz with the Holocaust Educational Trust. And the sixth form students, they came along and spoke. Every year we have two students who come. We work really closely with the Trust. They've sent 40,000 students over the last 10 years to Auschwitz. Students go from Dudley every year, and every year two of them come and talk at our event. That's happening all year round. And those kids, their lives will be changed forever. I've seen young people go on those trips, come back, and campaign against racism in the communities in which they live. 18 months ago, His Royal Highness, the Duke of Cambridge, visited Stourbridge, came to Stourbridge to unveil the statue of Frank Foley in Mary Stevens Park. And that's a permanent symbol of how British people, seemingly ordinary British people, could be. Look, people say, can an individual make a difference? Frank Foley was responsible for saving 10,000 Jewish people from the Holocaust. 10,000. You imagine how many children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren they've had. I mean, this will be huge numbers of people owe their lives to this great man's heroism. What he did was incredible. This is a guy, I don't know if you know this story, but he was an MI5 officer working undercover in the Berlin embassy before the war. And he forged documents, passports and visas, to enable Jewish people to escape from Germany when things were getting bad. He even went into concentration camps and got people out himself.
Which is a very risky thing to do.
Oh, look, if he'd been caught, he would have been shot.
Absolutely.
Right, he would have been shot. His diplomatic cover would not have protected him. And when he retired, He retired to Everson Road in Norton, and he lived a life of complete anonymity until he died in 1958. And nobody knew anything he'd done. He never talked about it, never boasted, until 1999, when his biography was written by a guy called Michael Smith. An amazing book, an incredible book. It's like reading a thriller. It's a really incredible book. And I decided that, look, I mean, this is an amazing example of how a seemingly ordinary person can find it within themselves to do extraordinary things in the service of other people. So I thought, well, look, we've got to have a permanent... And, the gates at Mary Stevens, there's a plaque on the wall and all that. And the council have an annual Frank Foley Prize for community activity and so on. But I thought, wouldn't it be good if we could have a statue? So we raised 40,000 quid. We got the statue put up. But the point of that is that I wanted it there as a permanent reminder of how the people we revere, the people we regard as heroes, the people who take risks to save other people, you know, to stand up to racism, stand up to fascism, and, and try to protect people. An amazing thing.
Ian Austin, thank you very much indeed for talking to Friday Night Clive. My name is Clive Payne, and you're listening to the Friday Night Clive podcast. If you like what you're hearing, don't forget to subscribe to the latest instalment at blackcountryradio.co.uk/podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts from. Now, on with this week's episode. I was talking to former Labour MP Ian Austin about his the experience that he learned from his father about being a refugee over in Auschwitz and why the Holocaust Memorial is important to Ian. And briefly, he touched on his reasons for leaving the Labour Party. Now, as I say, Ian was at the memorial event at Dudley College today, and he said that there were about 400 or so people there. And my colleague Roy Felstead was there as well. And Roy had the opportunity to talk to a couple of students, which Ian referred to, Elizabeth Oldnell and James Payne. Now, they're both 17 and 18 years of age, respectively. They're Holocaust Education Trust ambassadors. And Roy got the chance to speak to them, and James was telling him how he got the opportunity to go and experience Auschwitz for himself.
Well, our history teacher, he teaches us A-level history. He announced in class that...
Which school is this?
Old St. Vith Hospital.
Right.
Announced in class that students in the past had participated in the Lessons from Auschwitz project. Yeah. And we all had to send in emails of why we think we should go. And, of course, both of us were so passionate about the subject. It's affected so much, and it has to be remembered. So I really wanted to go. So I put my heart and soul into this email, and we went, and we saw a survivor, a testimony, had a few seminars to prepare us, because it's obviously such a harrowing experience, we need to prepare for it. And we did go and visit, and it was such a life-changing experience that I'd never forget.
Is that the similar story for yourself then? Are you about the same class are we in?
Or? Same class. I sit next to him in history.
Do you really?
So, yeah.
By choice or alphabetically?
Yeah. No, it's by choice. Yeah.
So what did you put in your email then that impressed him so much?
I wrote about how it is so important that to move forward, we need to learn from our mistakes in the past, and how can we ever move forward without looking back slightly and learning. And about how we all need to remember and stand together and remember together as a collective, because it is just hugely important to prevent an atrocity of this scale happening again.
Did you know much about it before it was brought up to you in class?
I've always been really interested in history. I've been brought up with history surrounded my life from a young age, so I've always been interested in it.
And the particular thing we're talking about, the Holocaust, we mentioned, of course, that before it started, that I think the phrase that was used, words and worship, it's just small words and worship, and they may have discriminated or separated people.
Yeah.
Is that how you think it starts, with something like this?
Yeah, it starts with a small spark, and it grows into a huge flaming fireball of anti-Semitism and persecution, and we all need to stand together to prevent that from occurring again.
Have you ever been to that area of Europe before?
No. I know my cousin went on this trip, so he definitely recommended it for me. So
it's an interesting thing. You can recommend a beach holiday, you can recommend going on a sporting or activity holiday, But I can imagine, having seen films of the place, that is it as moving as it's portrayed when you arrive?
See, that's the interesting thing was, when we were on the plane, should we be excited for this or should we be nervous for it? And it's definitely not a holiday. It's more of an experience. I'm glad that I did it. Definitely not a holiday, though. It was such a change in atmosphere, because it was a cold day anyway, but as soon as we went in, it's almost as if the sun disappeared, and it was such a moving experience.
Is that how you felt too?
Yeah, I think it's something that everybody should do. It, like James says, it's not a holiday. It's an experience that everybody should go and see, because I don't think seeing the films and seeing documentaries of people who've been is enough. You can think it's harrowing and sobering, but as soon as you get there and you see it for yourself, it is a life-changing trip.
I mean, people have been... I was just talking to Mindy about it, and she was referencing the Spielberg film, Schindler's List, and having read and heard about what Spielberg said when he put it together, he was on a journey himself, with and he's Jewish and part of it, and learning from that. I get the impression that when you turn up a place or arrive at a place like that, denomination, who you believe in, if you believe in God or whatever, doesn't seem to be a distinguishing factor there, is it?
No. We were walking around Birkenau, and there were groups of Jewish rabbis singing in prayer, and everybody joins together in solidarity out of respect, and it's so moving. Race, religion, it's not defined there. It's just a place where everybody joins together.
Where do you see things? May I ask your ages?
I'm 18.
I'm 17.
17, 18. So, with what you see around this part of the world, in this part of Britain, you heard the reference even to things that are happening in sport and players of a certain colour or whatever things being said to them in this country or elsewhere. Is that what we learn for something like this?
Yeah, see, I remember a quote. One thing we learn from history is that we do not learn from history. These events are continuously occurring, and that's the whole motive behind this project, is to stop it from happening again, because what's really so different about injustice in sport and a mass genocide, it could happen again, and that's the really scary thing, and that's why I think we both feel so passionate to spread awareness of this and hopefully put an end to such injustice in the world.
Do you feel the responsibility is with the people who have the biggest say on TV and media, across the media, whether or not it's Twitter, whether or not it's social or the social media, television, whether or not they're politicians or if they're just like you and I, part of it, who has the biggest responsibility to make sure the sort of message that comes out of today stays in our minds?
I think every single individual person has a huge level of responsibility, because we all need to sing from the same hymn sheet. It's pointless politicians sending out a message of we all need to stand together if the people don't abide by it. Everybody needs to uphold the same value, that we should not let this happen again, and we should have a more equal world free of such atrocities as this and persecution.
Yeah. Anyone who has heard a testimony or heard anything about the Holocaust is technically a witness, and I think everyone definitely has a responsibility. It doesn't matter if you have the media to spread awareness. Everyone needs to do it.
I'll just ask one question of yourself. In what you said was about when you saw the images.
Yeah.
Is that what, hadn't you not seen? We talked about films and movement. Is it the images that they show when you go there that are different, or?
It's the walls of photos, isn't there?
Yeah, there's walls of photos.
They've taken them out of people's pockets, personal belongings, and seen them all on the walls, isn't it? They have every single photo they've taken out on display, and I think it's walking around like that, isn't it?
Yeah, seeing. It is different to what you see in the films, because the films, though based on non-fictional events, these pictures are real, and it's unlike a textbook, a history textbook, where it's slightly censored. These were really graphic, but so revealing and important. And I'm quite ashamed of it, but before going on this trip, I didn't even realise how bad it was. Like I said, 6 million is a statistic, but it really humanises each and every person.
Yeah.
And that's so, so important, definitely.
Yeah. Anything else you'd like to add?
Just that we all have a moral obligation not to be bystanders and not to let this happen again. And we just all need to stand together and draw together as a community to prevent such an atrocity happening again in the future.
So if anybody you come across, whether or not they be of a certain religion or a colour, and somebody says something derogatory about them, would you stand and say, that's not right?
Definitely.
Yeah.
100%. Yeah.
That's great. Thank you.
I don't think I can add anything to that. That's Elizabeth Oldknoll and James Payne, who were at the Holocaust Memorial event today at Dudley College. And they're ambassadors now for the Holocaust Education Trust. Now, earlier on today at the Holocaust Memorial event at Dudley College, my colleague Roy Felstead spoke to Mindu Hornick. Now, she's a survivor of the Holocaust. And as I was saying earlier on, she was deported to Auschwitz when she was 12. I'll play you that interview in a second. Much like the interview with Elizabeth and James, there is a lot of background noise there because, as Ian was saying, it's a very, very busy event. So apologies for the background noise. But here's Roy talking to Mindu Hornick.
There were two messages you wanted to get across yes. to people from today.
Yes.
What were the two things?
That there is to appreciate each other, to no hate, no prejudice, and no rise of anti-Semitism. That is our main important things because, as Ian said before, it starts with words. And we don't want actions to take place. And we work a lot with the interface. We are just as important to us that Birmingham is a multicultural, multiracial, multi-faith society. That we help to integrate. We help to integrate the people by example. We are a very small Jewish community, but we are trying to show examples, such as on the 9/11 event, such as the 2019 event, and we are trying to do our best, but we want everybody else to join in, not just us.
For the future, say the other thing for the future, would there be a concern about how people remember it? How do you want us to go on to think about what happened?
By educating young people, and this is what I do. I go to schools tirelessly because that is our future. Young people should be educated and to tell them about the tragic events of the 20th century, because it was a tragedy. I mean, when I remember as a young girl thinking when I got into that camp, is this the dark ages of the 20th century? Who would allow such crimes to be committed? And I remember asking, and I was only just 13, who would allow such crimes? I am saying is that the children and the children of the perpetrators, as well as those of the victims, should know about the Holocaust and pray. This year is standing together and pray for a better future in the 21st century. Frankly, and I mean, I am horrified when these sportsmen on the fields are still get abused. Never mind they're black, never mind they're sportsmen, they're representing the country, and that they still get abused, I think it's absolutely terrible.
And you notice when you tell the story, when you go into the schools, I'm sure it's the same.
It is, yeah, the schools. I did Bartley Green Grammar a couple of days ago, and the feedback I get from the children, I feel it's worse than my effort. I am 90, you know, and it's a big effort, too, to to do all these events all at once.
It's absolutely admirable. And
three events already this week. This afternoon.
It took you a few decades, you were saying, when you stood on the podium.
You couldn't speak about it.
You couldn't speak about it.
But I think what happened was when the... it was after the war in England.
Yeah.
And people had their own problem that was fathers, they had sons and so on. And nobody really wanted to hear about it. But when the book started appearing, and I think what really brought it to people's attention was the diaries of Anne Frank, to realise what the Jewish people went through during the Nazi regime. And then there was Schindler's Ark, you know, the Schindler's List. But the book that came out 2 or 3 years earlier won the Booker Prize, and it was the best-selling book for 2 or 3 years before Spielberg decided to... And he said, when he started, he said, how could I... However I dramatize, how can I project the misery that's going on there? There's no way I can project it. But this is the reason he decided to do it in black and white. He decided to do it in bad weather. And because he felt if he put color on it or sunshine, it would lighten the situation. But he sat on that book for 3 years because he didn't know how he could possibly do it. He said, however I dramatize him, there is no way I can project what's going on there.
But you telling the story the way you do gets it right across.
Well, yeah. That is why we are making the effort to cover the schools and these lovely children. The Holocaust education has gone into it, and they are being sent to Auschwitz. We send each year 2 or 3 pupils.
Yeah.
Because I work with Anne Frank Trust and I work with the Holocaust Education Trust, and we send people.
I'm smiling because what you're achieving, what you're doing at the age of 90. And congratulations, by the way, on the MBE.
Thank you.
Super. How did you get to know? I know you've got to go. How and when did you get to know about that?
About a month before, they had a letter, would I accept
it?
And I was told an absolute secrecy, not to talk about
it. Yeah.
And then till the New Year honours come out. Yeah, it was very... I'm surprised and very nice to accept.
I know you may have been asked, who would you like to be given to you by when you go down there? Who would you like it to be?
Well, I think William, and he will do it. I think so, because... Or Charles is also lovely.
Mindu Hornick, MBE, talking to Roy Felstead earlier on today at the Holocaust Memorial event at Dudley College. That's your lot for this episode. You can catch the show live every Friday night on Black Country Radio from 8 p.m. If you love our podcast, please subscribe by heading to blackcountryradio.co.uk/podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts from. See you very soon. This is a Black Country Radio podcast, presented by Clive Payne, production by Andy Caddick and Alex Griffiths.